I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My guest today, Dr. David O. Carpenter, is a public health physician whose current position is director of the Institute for Health and the Environment at the University at Albany, as well as professor of environmental health sciences within the School of Public Health at the University of Albany. After receiving his medical degree from Harvard Medical School, he chose a career of research and public health. After research positions at the National Institute of Mental Health and the Armed Forces Radiobiology Research Institute, he came to Albany in 1980 as the director of the Wadsworth Center for Laboratories and Research of the New York State Department of Health, the third largest public health laboratory in the United States after NIH and CDC. In an effort to build ties with an academic program, he initiated efforts to create a partnership between the New York State Department of Health and the University of Albany, resulting in the creation of the School of Public Health in 1985. He was then appointed as the founding dean of the School of Public Health, a position he held until 1998, when he became the director of the Institute of Health and the Environment. Dr. Carpenter's research initially was basic neurobiology and more recently has primarily been the study of human disease resulting from exposure to environmental contaminants. He has focused on the relationship between exposure to a variety of chemicals and ionizing radiation on incidence of several human diseases, including diabetes, hypertension, heart disease, and diseases of the nervous system. He has extensive international scientific collaboration in Japan, China, Uganda, Pakistan, Turkey, and Russia. The institute, which he directs, has recently been identified as a collaborating center of the World Health Organization. Dr. Carpenter is also a member of the Scientific Advisory Board of the International Joint Commission, an organization that advises the governments of the United States and Canada on issues related to the Great Lakes. He has more than 350 peer-reviewed publications and has edited 5 books. When he arrived in Albany in 1980 as the director of the Wadsworth Laboratories of the New York State Department of Health, he was given the responsibility of administering a program to determine whether there were adverse health effects of electromagnetic fields initiated because of concerns of hazards from high-voltage power lines. A $5 million research program was begun, and when finished in 1987, the program concluded that while there were effects of EMFs on many organ systems, a particular concern was an increased incidence of leukemia in children living in homes with elevated magnetic fields. After that time, Dr. Carpenter became the spokesperson for New York State on issues related to EMFs. He has continued to evaluate research in this area and has edited 2 books and written several review articles on the subject. He testified before the President's Cancer Panel in 2009 on human health effects of both power lines and radio frequency EMFs from a variety of sources, particularly from cell phones. He is the co-editor of the Bioinitiative Report, www.bioinitiative.org, published first in 2007 and revised in 2012, which is a comprehensive review of the effects of EMFs. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Carpenter, and I look forward to learning more about electromagnetic fields. Now, first, what is EMF?
Well, electromagnetic fields are packets of energy that don't have any mass, and the form that most people know very well is visible light.
Mm-hmm.
Visible light travels at the speed of light, and there are waves of different frequencies, and those are how we distinguish color. So blue has a higher frequency than red, and they travel very fast, and our eyes have evolved to detect the differences in wavelengths.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the electromagnetic spectrum goes over a wide range of frequencies and wavelengths. And at the very high frequency, we have ionizing electromagnetic fields. That includes X-rays, cosmic rays, gamma rays. And these are extremely high frequencies. All of EMFs are sine waves, so they rise and fall. And the frequency is a function of how rapidly they rise and fall. The higher the frequency, the greater the energy in the electromagnetic fields. If you come down from the ionizing component, you go through the infrared part of the electromagnetic field. I missed the ultraviolet, but then mm-hmm. you have the ultraviolet, the infrared, the visible. And then you get down in the part that we're going to be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The communication frequencies, which we would usually refer to as radio frequency electromagnetic fields.
Mm-hmm.
These are the frequencies that are radio, television, Wi-Fi, smart meters. All of these wireless devices use electromagnetic fields of different frequencies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then even below that, we have the electromagnetic fields that are associated with electricity.
Mm-hmm.
In this country, our electricity is 60 hertz, 60 cycles per second. In much of the rest of the world, it's at 50 cycles per second. And there are electromagnetic fields associated with those frequencies as well. There's a magnetic field and there's an electric field. And the interesting thing is that while it's been well understood for many, many years that the ionizing electromagnetic fields can cause harm, there has been great skepticism that those at lower frequency than visible light can be dangerous, because obviously life on Earth wouldn't be possible without
mm-hmm.
both the visible light and mm-hmm. the infrared radiation that heats the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we have increasing evidence that there are human health effects of these lower frequency electromagnetic fields.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We usually think of harmful, but it sounded like when you mentioned color, that there are really some good EMF sources in our environment. Is that correct?
Oh, that's absolutely correct. And there are many natural EMF sources in our environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that all of us are exposed. The issue is excessive exposure.
Oh.
And it's like many other things that are essential and valuable and worthwhile in moderation,
mm-hmm.
but in excess can cause harm.
Mm-hmm. And how dangerous then is EMF in our environment in terms of health, especially cancer?
Well, it's difficult to give a very definitive answer.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly am not saying that EMF is the most dangerous carcinogen, because
mm-hmm.
it clearly
mm-hmm.
is not.
Mm-hmm.
But there is strong evidence and growing evidence that excessive exposure to EMF can cause some cancers. And the evidence is strongest for leukemia and for brain tumors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, neither of these are, you know, among the top 10 cancers, but they are serious diseases, and especially brain tumors are often fatal.
Right.
The interesting thing is that the strongest evidence for cancer from EMFs comes from the studies of childhood leukemia in relation to electricity use.
Mm-hmm.
And that information has been around for a long period of time, that children that live in homes that have high magnetic fields from local power lines and excessive electromagnetic fields in their home from appliances and household wiring are more likely to have leukemia than mm-hmm. children that are not so exposed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then there's additional evidence for leukemia in adults depending on their occupation. If they work in an occupation where there are high exposures to electricity and the associated magnetic fields, they're more likely to have to develop leukemia.
Mm-hmm.
The radio frequency fields also have been associated with elevations in leukemia, but the biggest concern with the radio frequency fields has been brain cancer from people talking for too long a period of time on their cell phone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that evidence is, in my judgment, very strong and also is growing.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, it appears that the younger you are when you start to use your cell phone, the more likely you are to be at risk for developing brain cancer.
Oh.
But there is also some evidence that children that live by very powerful radio transmitter stations, Vatican Radio is a case in point because mm-hmm. it's very powerful, generates signals that are received all over Europe. But children living close to the transmitters in Rome are more likely to develop leukemia, and that elevation in risk goes down as you go farther and farther away from the transmitters.
Mm-hmm.
Similar observations have been made in Korea. So the way I see the issue with cancer is that if your whole body is exposed to EMFs, mm-hmm. As is the case around electricity or around a radio transmitter station, probably around the Wi-Fi environment,
mm-hmm.
and leukemia is the cancer of concern. Whereas if you hold your cell phone to your head, then it's brain cancer, it's tumors of the auditory nerve, it's tumors of the salivary glands in your cheek. And there's now some evidence, apparently some women wear their cell phone in their bra, which sounds mighty uncomfortable to me.
Right.
But developing evidence that women that do so are at elevated risk of developing breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So local exposure leads to local cancers.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Then, Dr. Carpenter, are there ways to measure EMF in our environment?
Yes, there are. There are meters that will measure EMFs of different frequencies. Usually there's a different meter for measuring the electricity-related fields from those in the radio frequency fields. They're not outrageously expensive. The mm-hmm. radio frequency measurements are a little bit more complicated because there's such a wide range of frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I have both kinds of meters and will use them frequently.
Mm-hmm.
The reality, as I said earlier, is that we are all exposed to all of these things all of the time,
mm-hmm.
from natural sources and from man-made sources. But what has changed in the last 20 years is the amount and the increase in the sources of exposure, especially to radio frequency fields.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can't go into a Starbucks or into a McDonald's without being in a Wi-Fi environment.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Many of us have Wi-Fi in our homes. There are whole cities that are going Wi-Fi. Almost all airports are Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that exposure is not excessive,
mm-hmm.
but like any other adverse exposure, what's important is the aggregate exposure, what you get from all of these sources combined.
Mm-hmm.
And when people talk on their cell phone held to their ear, they have Wi-Fi at their home, they have wireless this, wireless that, they have high current electricity around them, then it's this aggregate exposure that we believe is the risk factor for developing these various kinds of cancer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there a value in individual homeowners having one of these meters?
There is a value because one cannot perceive these fields.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you one example. when my son was young, I had just gotten one of these meters.
Mm-hmm.
And I took it home and monitored the fields from the electric current in his bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And as it happened, his bed was on the side of the room that had the power cables running through the wall, and there was an elevated magnetic field there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was outrageously elevated, but by moving his bed to the other wall, mm-hmm. which was no big deal,
mm-hmm.
He then could sleep the night without being exposed to any elevation in magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
One characteristic of these fields is they all fall off relatively rapidly with distance.
If
there is a point source. Now, that's, mm-hmm. of course, not true in a Wi-Fi environment. It's not true if you live around a cell tower, because they do fall off with distance, but over a much longer distance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But if you use your cell phone and have an earpiece and have the cell phone more than about a foot away from your body,
mm-hmm.
there's no radio frequency exposure to your body. Because that signal from the cell phone to the cell tower falls off very rapidly with distance.
Mm-hmm.
So removing your body from sources is one important characteristic, and that is a reason why it's sometimes very, very valuable for people to have these meters in their home.
Mm-hmm. I've heard people say that some people even turn off the circuits to the electrical outlets in their bedroom when they go to bed at night.
Well, that's really not such an unwise thing to do.
Oh, it's not.
Now, there are two kinds of fields with regard to electricity.
Mm-hmm.
The one that is the most dangerous from all the evidence we have,
mm-hmm.
is the magnetic field. The magnetic field is directly proportioned to the current that flows.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you have all of the appliances turned on, they're going to be drawing current, so you'll have magnetic fields. Now, there's an electric field also, and that's proportional to the voltage. And while the evidence that the electric field is dangerous is not very strong, if you turn off all the power, then you are turning off both the electric and the magnetic field.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's an extra precaution. Most people aren't going to have very elevated fields in their bedroom, but there are certain sources that do generate a lot of magnetic field. For mm-hmm. example, the old style alarm clocks that had the motor that runs. Most of us don't have those any longer,
mm-hmm.
but they happen to generate very high magnetic field.
Oh.
Electric blankets are a concern,
mm-hmm.
because not that they draw a huge current, but you sleep with them very close to your body.
Oh.
And mm-hmm. therefore, the magnetic field, since it falls off with distance and your body is right up next to the blanket, that does give one a significant exposure.
Mm-hmm.
So it's much wiser to heat the bed with the electric blanket, but then turn it off before you crawl in.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good. Then, is there a specific meter that you would recommend for individuals, or are they all basically the same?
I'm not an expert on specific meters. The,
mm-hmm.
the one I have for electric measurements, I know is not available any longer because the company went out of business.
Oh.
But I think one can just go on the web and search, and you will find
mm-hmm.
meters that will do these measurements.
And about how much should they cost, do you know?
Well, I think the radio frequency meters cost about $800.
Mm-hmm.
The magnetic field meters probably are about $300.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't really looked at that
mm-hmm.
very carefully lately, so I'm take that answer with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm. Then you...
But it's in the range of several hundred dollars.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Then you mentioned that distance is very important. Are there other things that we can do, distance, turning off things at night? Does it help to turn the computer off? Or doesn't
Well, yes, it does.
Does it?
Because, now, computers are really not very great generators of these fields.
Oh.
I've certainly taken measurements around my computers regularly. Mm-hmm. Again, if it's a wireless computer, that's a different issue, because a wireless computer is certainly going to be receiving wireless signals.
Mm-hmm.
It's much wiser to always have a wired computer.
Mm-hmm.
But if a regular computer that's plugged in for power is going to have some magnetic fields, but they're going to be back at the backside of the hard drive where the power cord comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not very much at the keyboard or the video screen that is of concern.
Mm-hmm.
So the better thing is to keep the hard drive a little bit away from where you're spending a lot of time,
mm-hmm.
but don't be too concerned about the electromagnetic fields if it is not a wireless device.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with regard to Wi-Fi and wireless devices, I have very great concern about what's happening in our schools, because there's mm-hmm. an enormous mm-hmm. movement to have everything be wireless.
Right.
And if you have a wireless classroom with 20 or 30 kids all on a wireless laptop with one big router controlling all of these, the room is going to be a miniature microwave oven. And those children are going to be exposed to very high levels of radio frequency fields.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, if, as I said, the concern with whole body exposure is leukemia, but the latency for developing leukemia after some environmental exposure is probably the order of at least 5 years. So the kids may not develop cancer while they're in school, but 5, 10, 20 years afterward,
mm-hmm.
if they develop leukemia, who's to say what it was caused by? So I really think that it's unwise for schools to go wireless for the computer classrooms. If you have wired computers, there's no elevated radio frequency field.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And one can do everything on a wired computer. You connect to the Internet just as well as with a wireless computer. It may be a little less flexible in that you have to keep the same room for the computer lab, but it's much safer.
Mm-hmm. I noticed the same thing when I traveled in Europe. Now, I don't know if they still have these and if they're wired or not, but they had computer rooms where people would come and pay to use the computer, and there were a lot of computers in that one room. So it would be the same type of thing as in the schools, right?
That's absolutely correct. And if, you know, again, if it's wired connections, it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
If it's wireless, it's a potential problem. Now, I don't mean to overstate the risk,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
it's an evolving area. There's certainly some controversy about how serious a hazard this is. But, you know, my philosophy as a public health physician is that when there is some evidence of harm, we should take steps to reduce exposure, even if the magnitude of the risk is not 100% clear.
Mm-hmm.
I see this as, yes, there's definitely a risk. Whether it's a small risk or a larger or medium risk is not clear,
mm-hmm.
but it's very inconvenient to have a wired computer.
Right.
Or use a wired earpiece
mm-hmm.
on your cell phone. Now, a lot of kids are texting. Nobody's ever demonstrated cancer of the thumb,
mm-hmm.
so that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting. If you read the fine print in almost every cell phone, there'll be a statement there saying, do not hold this cell phone closer than about 1 inch away from your head.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, nobody ever reads that.
No.
Uh-huh. Now, the reason that that's in the fine print is probably to try to reduce the risk of litigation when you develop your brain cancer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very telling that even the manufacturers advise not holding the cell phone close to your head, which everybody does when they use a cell phone unless they have a wired earpiece.
Mm-hmm. Are there any additional things that we can do besides the distance and turning things off when they're not being used and getting the computer wired? Are there other things that we can do?
Well, there is very little that one can do to shield against radio frequency fields. There are some devices, some methods that people have for making drastic changes to their home to shield from fields, but I think they're not really appropriate for the general population. Now, I should talk a little bit about the syndrome of electrohypersensitivity, because this is much less certain than the issues with regard to cancer. But this is something that is growing in importance and in frequency. Now, there are some people that are very sensitive to electromagnetic fields, and they develop a whole series of symptoms that are primarily headache, fatigue, feeling like their brain isn't working quite right. They can have pain. They can have ringing in the ears. And this comes only when they're in a Wi-Fi environment, when they're using their cell phone, sometimes when they're in strong magnetic fields from electricity. And then the symptoms go away when they go in a different environment. Now, there are some people that are exquisitely sensitive and really disabled, can't live in a place, often can't live in apartment buildings because too many people have their Wi-Fi and their smart meters and things like that. There's debate about what percentage of the population suffers from this, but some reports say that 5 or 10% of the public has this syndrome. Many of them don't realize what is causing it. So if you're getting headaches and you feel fatigued, sometimes, and if you go in different environments, it goes away, it's worth thinking about this. Now, for those people, again, there's no treatment other than just removing themselves from environments where there's high exposure to electromagnetic fields.
Over time, does the energy build up in the body, or is it just it is high and then it's low and it's high and low, depending on what's in your environment, or does it build up in the environment, or I mean, in your body, or what happens that causes the disease?
Well, I think we don't have all of the answers to that question, and it's a very important question. I think we can say pretty clearly the energy does not build up in the body.
Oh, it doesn't.
But
good.
What the energy may do, and almost certainly does, is cause changes in the body that last for periods of time. We know that many of the radio frequency fields induce genes. And when I say induce genes, this energy is too low to directly cause mutations. It doesn't directly damage DNA. But it can cause genes to either upregulate or downregulate. Now, what we mean by upregulating and downregulating, the different genes are responsible for manufacturing different proteins. So if a gene is upregulated, it makes more of that protein. If it's downregulated, it makes less. And there's clear evidence that some genes are changed when the cells of the body are exposed to electromagnetic fields. There also is clear evidence that some electromagnetic fields cause the induction of free radicals, or what we would call scientifically as reactive oxygen species. And these can be very dangerous. As a matter of fact, reactive oxygen species are usually thought to be the basic cause of aging because they cause damage. They damage our cells. They damage cell membranes. And as we get older, we accumulate this damage slowly until our body doesn't function well any longer. Between the gene induction and the reactive oxygen species, these are the mechanisms we think are most likely the basis of the variety of diseases that we see on exposure to electromagnetic fields.
Are there any sources of nutrition that could make a difference? I'm thinking of, you know, the antioxidants or the omega-3s. Or is there anything that gives some protection to the individual?
Certainly the antioxidants would be things that you would think would reduce the danger of the reactive oxygen species. But, you know, it's the studies that have been done, there haven't been any studies that I'm aware of specifically on electromagnetic field effects. But there have been a number of other studies on antioxidants, including natural vitamins. And I've been on this Harvard Physicians Health Study for many, many years. It's ended now, but it is interesting because parts of that study would be that you take vitamin C or vitamin E or a multivitamin, and you see whether that reduces the risk of people developing cancer. Now, this was all kinds of cancer, not just those from electromagnetic fields. Well, the first part of the study, it was beta-carotene, and you either got beta-carotene or you got a placebo. Beta-carotene is a free radical scavenger. What that study showed, it turned out in that study, I was in the placebo group, although I didn't know it, but it showed it actually increased the risk of cancer. Not the expected result. The next part of the study was either vitamin E or vitamin C or placebo. And I was in the active group on both of them, and they didn't do anything to rates of cancer. The final study was the multivitamin, and I was in the active group on that one, and they did find a very small beneficial effect. But I think the point is that, well, theoretically, these vitamins and antioxidants that should reduce risk of developing cancer have, in general, not been shown to be very effective in doing that. And that's, of course, cancer from all kinds of sources.
Well, one that I did read about a year ago, and I got very excited about it because it related to my own experience, and that was they used vitamin A with breast cancer cells, precancer cells, and normal cells. And there was no effect on the cancer cells. There was no effect on the normal cells, but it reverted the precancer cells back to normal. And the reason that that stuck with me was because 40 years ago when I had lung cancer and was treated by an alternative physician, he put me on 200,000 international units of vitamin A for 2 weeks, then 100,000 for 2 weeks, and then 50,000 for a year. And I told him, I'm very concerned about this because it's way above the normal range. It's a vitamin, it's a fat soluble, it's stored in the fat. And he said, well, I'm going to give you vitamin E because it will help with the toxicity. And I said, but vitamin E is another fat soluble. But it worked. And as I say, this research was 40 years later.
Well, you are extraordinarily fortunate to have survived lung cancer because it's a very bad cancer. I'm a little surprised at the vitamin A results because vitamin A does have toxicity at high doses. There's not so much toxicity with vitamin E. But, you know, again, the issue is vitamins are absolutely essential for health. They have multiple effects. But, again, one's got to be a little concerned that excessive exposures may have negative effects.
Now, another question. Someone recently told me, because I was concerned about the electromagnetic frequency waves in because of my time in front of the computer, and they told me, and I couldn't find anything about this, they told me that NASA had done research that showed that cactus would absorb the rays, the electromagnetic energy. Have you ever heard anything about like that?
No, I never have heard that. I don't know anything about that.
I couldn't find anything about it, but they told me that NASA had discovered this, and I figured, well, if NASA had discovered it, it would have been all over the news.
Yeah, I'm a little skeptical of that, that result. I don't have any direct information.
Good. I bought cactus. I thought they're not going to hurt me one way or another, right?
Right.
Then, is there anything else you'd like to say then before we look at your books and how the listeners can reach you?
Well, yes. I think there are a couple of other diseases that we should talk about. There's increasing evidence that exposure to electromagnetic fields reduces male fertility.
Mm-hmm.
And this is of concern because so many men wear their cell phone in their belt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the evidence is extremely strong that sperm counts go down in men that expose their abdomen to cell phone frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been demonstrated also in isolated cells. There, you know, this may be a good way of contraception, but I don't think that's what most men want for that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
The other surprising disease for which there's increasing evidence is Alzheimer's disease. Now, nobody understands the cause of Alzheimer's disease. We have a lot of information about it. We know about the accumulation of beta amyloid in the brain. We know about the neurofibrillary tangles, which are due to a tau protein that accumulates in the brain. We have no idea of why exposure, especially to magnetic fields from electricity, would increase the risk of Alzheimer's disease, but that association appears to be quite strong.
Mm-hmm.
So these become other reasons for one to be cautious and do what you can. That is not a terribly difficult thing to do, just to reduce your exposure, because none of these are diseases that it's good to have.
Mm-hmm. Would the cell phone affect the prostate, or does it interfere with the testosterone, or do they not know at this point?
I think we don't know the answer to that. I've been waiting to see someone that does a study looking at the rates of prostate cancer in men that wear cell phones on their belt. I don't think that's been studied to date, but it's rather like the brain cancer from holding the cell phone to your head.
Mm-hmm.
If you're wearing your cell phone in your belt, you're going to be exposing your pelvis. The prostate's a little further away from the belt, but I would predict that sooner or later someone's going to demonstrate that association.
Well, that's, the BPH also is so high among men as they get older, and I don't know if it's if it's always been that way or if this is something that has changed over time.
Well, I think we're more aware of it because we're all living longer, and so the frequency of BPH is much greater now than it used to be when life expectancy was much less. Same is true for Alzheimer's disease.
Right.
There does appear to be a real increase in incidence, but the biggest increase is that people live longer, and these diseases are ones for which age is a major risk factor.
Great. Well, then, can you tell us about your books and how the listeners can reach you or find your book? You don't.
Well,
have...
I'm not sure which book you're asking about, but I'll talk about all of them.
Yeah, right. You have several, right?
The best information on EMF is the Bioinitiative Report. This is an online document. You can find it at www.bioinitiative.org. It was originally released in 2007 and then updated in 2012. It's a comprehensive review of electromagnetic fields, chapters written by experts from around the world. I and Cindy Sage were the co-editors of the whole report. It's the equivalent of a book, but it's It's all online, and it's not mm-hmm. hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are other chapters from that are basically abstracted from that online report that have been published in scientific journals. And if listeners are interested in getting copies of that, I'd be happy to provide them copies. My email address is dcarpenter@albany.edu.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my most recent book is on a totally different subject,
mm-hmm.
and it's called Human Health Effects of Persistent and Bioactive Organic Chemicals. And much of my work has been study of things like DDT and polychlorinated biphenyls, PCBs, and dioxins, and various pesticides. I've also done a lot of work recently on volatile organic chemicals. I've been involved in the debates about the risks from fracking and unconventional oil and gas activities that have been such a big economic boom, but often with inadequate protection to human health.
Mm-hmm.
So this book, again, I wrote five of the chapters, but they're contributions by many colleagues in different aspects of how organic chemicals affect the brain, how they affect the thyroid gland, the liver, the kidney, their relationship to heart disease, to bone and joint disease, to effects on the immune system and other organ systems.
Mm-hmm.
The book was published in 2013 by Wiley, and it's a wonderful resource. It's written primarily for scientists and the educated public. It's not super technical,
mm-hmm.
but it's a wonderful resource in terms of what the health effects of exposure to organic chemicals are.
Mm-hmm.
And organic chemicals are very much like EMS. We're all exposed to them all the time. And we're often exposed to them through things we don't even think about.
Mm-hmm.
For example, when you store food in plastics, or you drink out of a plastic
mm-hmm.
water bottle.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There are chemicals in that plastic that leach out, that get into your food, that get into your water.
Mm-hmm.
They may be thought to be benign, but in fact they are not.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Also, just today, in fact, we have released a volume of the journal Carcinogenesis, of which I'm a co-author on the lead article.
Mm-hmm.
This is the results from a meeting that we held in Halifax, Nova Scotia a year ago on what things cause cancer, what organic chemicals cause cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And we focus not on those chemicals known to be carcinogens, but on a lot of these chemicals that we're all exposed to every day, where we're all exposed to many different chemicals. And the question is,
mm-hmm.
what happens if you're exposed to mixtures of chemicals? And what we did was to take, we looked at those chemicals that are known to cause cancer. We looked at their biological effects. And then we asked the question, well, do these other chemicals that are not known to cause cancer, do they do some of the things, same things? And the clear answer is, yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
And the punchline from that, our concern is that this mixture of chemicals that come from our food, from our water, from our personal care products, you know, your deodorants,
mm-hmm.
your
mm-hmm.
all of these things contain chemicals. We live in this chemical soup.
Mm-hmm.
And the concern is that many of them have not been carefully studied. And when we look closely at what they do things similar to what known cancer-causing agents do. And so I'm very involved in study of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
We don't understand a lot of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
There's clear evidence that genes alone, that genetics alone, does not explain most kinds of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Most kinds of cancer have to be due to some environmental exposure. It may be from diet, it may be from what's in the air, it may be from what one's exposed to from EMS.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a chance thing, and therefore it's very important to try to understand the factors that lead to cells becoming cancerous.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that happens, too, is that you just get comfortable with some of these things, like Tom's. I use Tom's toothpaste because it doesn't have fluoride. If I ate frozen food at all, I picked Amy's because Amy's was organic, et cetera, et cetera. And then what happens is the big companies buy these out, and they leave the same name on, and you don't know,
then you don't know
what's
what
in them anymore.
That's right.
Right. Now, I haven't been able to track down Amy's. I had heard that a big company had bought it out, but I haven't been able to find out on that. But I know that someone bought Tom's, so it's changed. But I think it sounds like then I need to have you back again to talk about some of the organic chemicals and their influence on health and especially cancer, because that's another area that I wanted to have on my Cancer Foundation website as something that people can do something about, you know, like they can with the, if like the suggestions you gave today on what they can do as far as the EMF sources, you know, because I think a lot of cancer is trying to prevent as much as you can. I mean, you can't prevent everything. It's like the BPA and the plastic that you mentioned. You know,
right, but,
I've given up on that because I still use the bottles, but I know when they transport these things in the summertime, in the heat, it
yep.
melts in. I mean,
yep.
it's probably all right in the winter months, but in the summer, so the best I can do is to pick, which I didn't know until a couple of years ago, there's a little triangle on the bottom that's got a 1, 2, or 3 on it about the plastic rating, and that the 1 is the best and 2 is the next best. So I try now to stick with a 1, but I still, you know, and to buy canned foods again is another problem because there's
that's
only
right.
one brand that I know of that doesn't have the BPA in it. And if they take
right.
that out, it doesn't last very long, does it?
But, you know, it's the same issue as with the EMF. If one has some knowledge, you
mm-hmm.
can do things that aren't terribly inconvenient
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
to reduce your exposure and just live a healthier lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Great. So I'd like to have you back. And
well, I'd be happy to join you again, Carl.
Talk about the organic chemicals, because, again, that's such an important aspect of preventing cancer as much as you can.
And these organic chemicals increase the risk of a variety of diseases
mm-hmm.
in addition to cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So they're very important. I'd
right.
be happy to talk about that.
Good. I know that most of the people that I interact with on Facebook, Monsanto is like saying the devil. And I don't know, is Roundup organic chemical or is it?
Well, it certainly is an organic chemical.
It is. Oh.
And we've been declared a probable carcinogen by the World Health Organization.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, again, Roundup has had some beneficial effects,
mm-hmm.
but it also has some negative effects. And
right.
that would be something to be interesting to talk about.
Great. Good. And would you give us your website then?
Yes, my website is www.albany.edu/IHE for Institute for Health and the Environment.
Mm-hmm. And you don't have products, right?
No, no products.
Or services? You do?
Well, we do provide information on various things, but
mm-hmm.
we don't have anything that we sell.
Mm-hmm. Great, good. Okay, and then if anyone wanted to reach you to have you speak, they could reach you through your website, is that correct?
That's correct, or my email address that I gave you earlier.
Good. Well, I appreciate this very much. It's been very interesting, and we'll be.
I enjoyed talking with you.
Great, and I'll talk with you again then, Dr. Carpenter.
Thanks much.
Thank you. Bye. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. Information on how the foundation differs from others, board members, research on holistic natural ways to deal with cancer, including mental and spiritual interventions, interviews with cancer physicians and survivors, and more. If you would like to donate to the work I am supporting, there is a tab to donate, and I can offer you a tax exemption receipt if living in the United States. I also invite you to join me on Facebook at my Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Carl Helvey. On my Holistic Health Show page at www.facebook.com/pages/Holistic Health Show, and the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation page at www.facebook.com/beatlungcancernaturalalternative. On LinkedIn, I invite you to join me under my name, Dr. Carl O'Helvey. On Twitter, I invite you to join me at www.twitter.com/HolistHealthShow, HolistHealthShow. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to having you here in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.